Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed on AM 360 by the host, hostesses, or guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Sure Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific and personal medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to consult an advisor for your specific circumstances.
You have listened to us over 500,000 times. American Muslim 360.
That's interesting.
Assalamu alaikum. This is American Muslim 360 radio broadcast.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Ar-rahmanir rahim. Malik yawmiddin. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
American Muslim 360 is
too legit to quit.
We will never quit. American Muslim 360, your number one Muslim radio station.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at cwsconline@gmail.com. That's cwsconline@gmail.com. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Disadvantaged and communities of color, the path ahead, from wages to wealth gap, business and home ownership, jobs, unemployment, the economic, historic, and current effects of discrimination to the role of education and impact of technology and more, plus the good and bad of group economics and collective empowerment experiences and the relevance of such approaches in the 21st century. All are on the table for a discussion that will seek to distinguish between self-inflicted versus systemic economic and financial failure and the role of personal responsibility on the road to greater prosperity. Invited panelists include the AM 360 national talk show hosts who weekly deal with aspects of the subject matter, including Imam Nazim Pasha, host of Financial Literacy Equal Financial Liberation, Imam Adam Beya, host of Money Sense, Attorney Edward Ahmed Mitchell, host of CARE On Air, the Civil Rights Hour, and Imam DeLacy Uma Phillips, host of Preparing to Make It in the Land of Plenty, and Amir Wazir, author of Insurance Matters column, Muslim Journal, and you. Join me, along with my co-moderator, Mukhtar Muhammad, Executive Director for the CWSC, in a straight and to-the-point discussion you won't want to miss. Live Saturday, June 29th, 2019 at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on AM 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. We want to address as many of your concerns, opinions, and questions on the topic as possible. Email us at info@cwsc.us or leave a listener comment at 910-317-0297. Again, that's 910-317-0297, or tweet us at CWSHURAA in advance. Don't miss the next National Town Hall, Prosperity in Historically Disadvantaged and Communities of Color. Half ahead, part two. Together with faith and intellect, we can remake the world. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
Assalamu alaikum and good morning, everyone. Welcome to CARE on Air, the Civil Rights Hour. This is your host, Attorney Edward Ahmed Mitchell, coming to you from the state of Georgia. I hope you're all doing well. We, of course, begin in the name of Allah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Wassalatu wassalam ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful, all praise and thanks belong to God, the Lord of the worlds. May peace, blessings, and prayers be upon Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, his family, his companions, and all of God's prophets and messengers. And again, to everyone listening, assalamu alaikum, may peace be upon you. Today is June 26th, 2019. I hope everyone is doing well. Hope that you are still keeping up the Ramadan, post-Ramadan spirit, inshallah. May Allah forgive us for any backsliding and allow us to keep improving and to reach the next Ramadan and to be better entering it than we were exiting this past Ramadan. Ameen, Ya Rabbal Alameen. So today, inshallah, what we're going to do is focus on a topic that has been very relevant to CARE Georgia in the past few weeks and I think is very relevant across the nation, and that is mass incarceration, the problem of the issue of mass incarceration. During our last program 2 weeks ago, we focused mostly on discussing how to engage in interfaith dialogue at the local level, how in particular local communities and houses of worship can engage in interfaith dialogue. And we talked about everything from the logistics of how to send out invites, who to invite, how to run the program, who should be speaking, how to make sure you have a diverse and interesting program. We talked about the content of what to present, you know, how to cover the issues of Muslim practices, Muslim beliefs, Muslim history. You know, we covered all those things. And the last thing we did not get to, which I'll mention now before moving on to today's topic, is that the end of the session. So after you've explained who Muslims are, what Muslims believe, what Muslims practice, the best thing to do, I think, is to wrap up with questions and answers. Now, ideally, you've covered so much basic information during the presentation that the questions people have are not basic questions. They're not the questions about, what does Allah mean? Tell us more about the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. You've covered all that stuff already. So the questions you should be getting, ideally, at the end are going to relate to hot topics. All right, what is Sharia? What is jihad? What about women's rights in Islam? What's going on with terrorism? Things of that nature. Those are the questions you should probably expect in the back end of the event. And the key thing, of course, is to have someone who is speaking who can answer those questions intelligently and accurately and coherently, right? Many Muslims could answer those questions easily, but not necessarily all Muslims could answer those questions clearly or coherently, right? And so it's very important. And some Muslims can't even answer the questions accurately. They may not even have enough information themselves to even answer those questions accurately. So very important that whoever is appointed to act as the spokesperson, to act as the one who answers questions, knows what they are doing. And it's also okay to bring in other people to help out if the person who is designated may need some assistance, right? So with that, that's the last thing I want to tell you about last week's topic. So with that, let's move into this week's topic. Now, the reason we're talking about this is that Ebenezer Baptist Church here in Atlanta, which, as you know, may know, is the historic home of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., They held an interfaith conference on mass incarceration, on ending mass incarceration last week here at the church in Atlanta. And the goal of this conference was to inspire a faith-led movement to try to turn the tide against mass incarceration. So it was a very religiously themed event. Not everyone there was a person of faith, and not all the organizations involved were faith-based organizations, but definitely the theme of it had a religious bent to it, a faith-based theme to it, to try to rally people of faith together to lead the charge, just as people of faith led the charge in the civil rights movement and other movements to improve this country. So I'm happy that Muslims were invited to attend, able to attend. CARE Georgia was CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations nationally, and CARE Georgia in particular were sponsors of the event. I delivered a presentation there. So did Imam Daoud Waleed, who's the director of CARE Michigan. Imam Arshad Anwar, who is the religious leader at Roswell Community Mosque, a very prominent mosque just outside of Atlanta, spoke as well. And you had other Muslims participating in the event. So it was a very good event about ending mass incarceration. Now, all of that begs the question, what is mass incarceration? When we say mass incarceration, what are we talking about? What does that mean? And there's not necessarily any one single definition of mass incarceration. Generally speaking, when people say mass incarceration, what we are referring to is the unjust and ineffective system of imprisoning people at vastly unusually large numbers in the United States compared to other countries, imprisoning people for crimes they either did not commit, imprisoning them for and punishing them with punishments that are far too harsh based on the crimes they allegedly did commit, and creating correctional institutions that do everything and anything except correct their inhabitants, thereby creating a vicious cycle in which people go to prison, they get out, they can't build a new life for themselves, then going back to prison, getting out, doing the same thing again, creating this vicious cycle. So mass incarceration, when people refer to it, it can really mean many things, but it essentially refers to this unjust system of imprisonment that we have in this country that locks up way too many people and locks up way too many people for crimes with unduly harsh punishments for crimes they may have committed, and sometimes locks people up for crimes they did not commit at all. Indeed, during the event, two members of the Central Park Five were there and spoke at the event, including the Muslim brother Yassin was there and spoke at the event, as well as brother Santana was there as well. And so that was very nice to have them there speaking to the audience so that we could, you know, see, you know, in person people who had been victims of an unjust imprisonment, who had experienced the injustice of the prison system and, you know, survived it, lived, got out, and, you know, can now tell us, you know, what they've learned and are working to try to protect other people from experiencing the same thing. So anyway, so that's what we talk about when we mean mass incarceration. So let me talk to you about the thing that I focused on, and that is why this issue is important to the American Muslim community in particular. Number one, it's important because as Muslims, we care about issues of justice, period, right? If it's an issue of injustice, then to some extent, we should care about that. Even if we're not working on the issue directly, we may have to focus on other things. We should still, to some extent, care about that issue, be conscious of that issue, and try to do something about that issue if we can. And if not, then we at least hate it in our heart, as the hate the injustice in our heart, as the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam told us to do. So number one, it's just an issue of importance to us. Number two, it's an issue of particular importance to people of color, because most of the victims of mass incarceration are African Americans, Latino Americans, and other people of color. Not just people of color, but those are the primary victims of this system. And obviously the vast majority of Muslims in the United States are people of color. So it impacts us directly, whether you're Arab, Black, Latino, whatever. It's probably impacting you or someone you know in your family pretty directly. Number three, another major issue is that for Muslims in particular, we face a unique form of injustice in the criminal system, a unique form of injustice in the criminal system. And that unique form of the system that impacts us is what I spoke about during my presentation. My presentation was titled The Unique Impact of Mass Incarceration on the American Muslim Community. Again, the title was The Unique Impact of Mass Incarceration on the American Muslim Community. That was my topic, and I spent about an hour and a half on this topic, and I also brought in three speakers who were there. Mel Ledbetter, who is the director of the Coalition for Civil Freedoms and Advocacy Group, Imam Daoud Waleed, who, as I mentioned, is the director of CARE Michigan and an imam by training, and Brother Tariq Baina, who is with Iman Atlanta, the Inner City Muslim Action Network, and is also himself a survivor of the prison system. So together we discussed, again, the topic of the unique impact of mass incarceration on the American Muslim community. And so what I want to do today is just to give you a little rundown of the presentation, what we covered during that event, and hopefully then you'll understand what this issue of mass incarceration is for Muslim Americans in particular, and what we can do about this, inshallah. So here are the four things that I covered in the presentation, which I will cover today, inshallah. Number one, we covered basic statistics about Muslims in the U.S. prison system. How many Muslims are in the U.S. prison system? Where are they located? Who are they demographically? What are they, you know, just what are the facts? How many Muslims are in prison? What are some basic facts about them? Next, we talk about what Muslims experience in the criminal system from beginning to end, because mass incarceration is not just referred to what happens in prison, but how people get to prison in the first place. You understand? And so when we talk about this issue, we have to first talk about, especially with the Muslim community, how law enforcement deals with Muslims suspected of committing crimes. What do Muslims experience when they're just at the investigative stage of maybe allegedly possibly having committed some sort of crime? What are some of the unique things that Muslims experience at that stage, okay? And then after that, we talk about, okay, if a Muslim American has been charged with a crime, or a Muslim in America has been charged with a crime, and they're now in the criminal system, but they've not yet been convicted, what are they facing? What are they experiencing in that system, and what are some things that they experience that may be unique to them as Muslims in America? So that's the second part. And then the next part is, okay, what do Muslims experience as prisoners? Let's say they've been arrested and jailed or convicted of a crime and put in prison. What do Muslims experience in prison, and how do those experiences relate to and impact mass incarceration? So those are the three topics that we discussed in order. Number one, basic stats about Muslims in the U.S. prison system. Number two, Muslims as targets of law enforcement investigations, what they experience then. Number three, Muslims as defendants in the criminal justice system. And then finally, number four, Muslims as prisoners in the criminal justice system, as inmates. And then after that, we talked about some solutions. So let's first talk about some basic stats about Muslims in the U.S. prison system. Number one, the general prison population in America, First, understand how significant this number is. You've got to first know how many Americans there are in total, how many people live in America. As of 2016, 324,200,000 people living in the United States of America, give or take. Again, 324,200,000 people living in the United States of America as of 2016. Now, of that number, how many people are imprisoned or jailed? How many people are imprisoned or jailed or on probation or somehow under the thumb of the criminal justice system? So if you just look at the number of people who are literally imprisoned, literally in jail, the prison population, the number as of 2016 was 2,298,300 people. Let me say that again. 2,298,300 people in the prison system. Now, if we've got any math experts listening on the call, then you'll know that that's approximately, essentially, we're talking about 2.2 million people. 2.2 million out of 324 million people. That makes America the country with the largest prison population in the world and also the highest per capita incarceration rate in the world. That is, the number of people we've got in prison per the number of people on the general population, America is the largest number. America is the prison capital of the world. So when we talk about mass incarceration, that's what we're talking about first and foremost, the United States of America. Okay? So now let's get a little more interesting. So we know how many prisoners there are in the United States, about 2.2 million. Of them, how many of them are Muslim? How many of the prisoners are Muslim in the United States of America? Now, the answer is we don't know for sure. We don't know for sure. And the reason is that obviously prisons don't necessarily ask this of every single person that comes in. To the extent they do, they don't necessarily report those numbers to the public, right? However, the Pew Research Center did an interesting poll several years ago. I think it was in 2011. And what they did is they reached out to prison chaplains, who are the ones who interface with prisoners to talk about faith-based issues. And they asked those chaplains to share the numbers, the estimated numbers or percentages of how many people made up different faiths in their prison system. You follow me? So Pew Research Center did a survey of the chaplains to try to come up with a number of or a percentage of how many Muslims are in the prison system. And the number they came up with was, take a guess in your head, hopefully you've taken a guess. So the number they came up with is 9%. 9% of the U.S. prison population, Muslims. Okay? Now, here's what's very interesting about that number. It is grossly disproportionate to the number of Muslims in the United States of America. That is, if you look at the percentage of Muslims in America, right, compared to the percentage of Muslims in prison, there's a much higher percentage of the prison population being Muslim than there logically should be because of how small the Muslim population is. In fact, Muslims make up about 0.9% of the U.S. population total. There are about 3 million American Muslims, about 0.9% of the general American population Muslim. And yet the reverse, move the decimal points, 9% of the prison population Muslim, right? So very interesting stat, okay, very interesting statistics. That's what we're working with here, okay? So again, to review, over 300 million Americans total. In the general prison population, about 2.2 million prisoners total. In the general American Muslim population, about 3 million American Muslims total. And the percentage of U.S. prisoners who are Muslim, 9% estimated by the Pew Research Center. And again, that compares to the 0.9% of Americans who are Muslim. Now, all this begs a question. Why are there so many Muslims in the prison system? What's going on? Are Muslims losing their minds? No, there's actually a very easy answer for this, which we will address and get into. And that is that many Muslims convert to Islam in prison. That is, when they go into prison, they are not Muslim or they weren't practicing Islam, and they converted to Islam or came back to it while in prison. So that brings us to some demographic facts about people in prison. Number one, most of the converts, most of the people who embrace who are Muslim in the detention centers are converts to Islam. Number two, most of the Muslims who are in jail or prison are people of color, particularly African Americans. They make up a clear majority of the Muslims in the prison system, but not the only ones. There are many white Muslims in prison, usually converts, as well as some Latino Muslims in prison, also usually converts. Now, if you expand it out beyond the prison system and you think of immigration detention centers, which are essentially prisons, then you've got Muslims from around the world, Middle Eastern, African, Asian descent. Obviously, being immigrants, they're not African-American or Latino-American or white-American by and large in the immigration centers. So those are some basic facts about Muslims in the prison system. So as you can see, given the sheer percentages and the numbers, this issue has to be relevant to the American Muslim community. This is something that we should know about and care about, even if it's not something that we are necessarily working on directly. So those are some basic facts about Muslims in the prison system. Now, that brings us to our next topic, which is what do Muslims experience? How are Muslims ending up in the prison system, whether they're Muslim or not before, especially for those who are Muslim? How do they end up in the prison system in the first place? And what are the unique things they face, the unique challenges they face that may, you know, lead them to end up in the prison system? And so that is what we will discuss, inshallah, after we take a break. We'll take a break now for commercial public service announcements. And then we will come back after that and continue the discussion, inshallah. And again, this is Care on Air, the Civil Rights Hour, June 26th. Assalamu alaikum.
Peace be upon you. Are you enjoying what you're hearing? If so, stay tuned. We'll be right back after these short messages. You are listening live to American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in all of the nation.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Imam Nazim Pasha, host of El Islam-Based Conversations and Financial Literacy Equals Financial Liberation, right here on AM 360. I'm honored to invite you to cruise with me and the AM360 and the CWSE family to help celebrate the 10th anniversary of American Muslim 360 Radio and the building of our entire national intelligentsia. In March of 2020, we'll be departing the U.S. from Tampa, Florida, for a destination, the beautiful Western Caribbean island of Cozumel. We have so much planned for you, including pre-cruise interfaith events in Tampa, to a wonderful Juma at Sea, a grand gala, an award celebration, and a national symposium. Yours truly will join my fellow talk show hosts to bring the AM360 Network and some powerful intelligentsia presentations live aboard the Paradise. In addition to a wonderful family, friends, and community cruise, more than 10 presentations are planned, from the Courtship and Marriage Learning Lab and the Courtship Cafe to the Challenge of Technology, connecting with the global group intellect via the United Nations, to an intelligentsia presentation you won't want to miss on estate planning, with a special gift package reserved for cruise conferees. As a national talk show host, I'm blessed with the privilege of coming to you every week on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected. And now I look forward to the honor of meeting you in person and celebrating with you aboard the Paradise. So visit cwsc.us, that's cwsc.us now, and get ready for a faith voyage of a lifetime and a celebration for all ages. Bon voyage. Assalamu alaikum.
This is Mukhtar Muhammad, Executive Director for the CWSC and host of the new weekly CWSC Building the Community Life Seminar. And I'm inviting you to join me Monday mornings right here on AM360.org for a discussion designed to help communities nationwide on operational issues such as resource identification and management, organization, group decision making, structure, transparency, accountability and responsibility, and a whole lot more. This weekly seminar will air at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be inviting in periodically special guests and also inviting your comments live on air, as well as asking you to send in your comments via info@cwsc.us. You can tweet us at CW Shura, Facebook us, or leave a listener comment on the CWSC comment line at 910-317-0297. Our principal seminar references will include Al-Quran, Hadith, the commentary of Imam Dr. Waraduddin Muhammad, may Allah grant him the paradise, and the CWSC website at cwsc.us, and the text along with his blog, Genesis of New American Leadership. I look forward to hosting the seminar and having our lively discussion. Join us this Monday coming at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Assalamu alaikum.
And now back to Care on Air, Civil Rights Hour with Attorney Edward Ahmed Mitchell.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome back. Hope you are doing well. This is Care on Air, the Civil Rights Hour. I'm your host, Edward Ahmed Mitchell. Today is June 26th, 2019. And as you may know, if you're already listening, we are discussing the issue of mass incarceration. We're discussing the issue of mass incarceration. Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta held a conference last week at the church here in Atlanta about the issue of mass incarceration. And CARE Georgia was one of the sponsors of that event. We also spoke and delivered a presentation, alhamdulillah. And so today I'm essentially reviewing with you that presentation, what the presentation was, what we covered, and And where we left off, we discussed some basic facts about Muslims in the prison system, in the U.S. prison system, I should say. And now we're, inshallah, going to discuss the next step. And so, as I mentioned before, we want to cover three things, which is not just what happens in the prison system, but how people end up in prison in the first place, right? And so when we talk about the general American community, we're talking about, imprisoning, people for minor petty offenses, cash bail bond that makes it impossible for poor people to easily get out of jail. We're talking about unduly harsh punishments. We're talking about prosecutions and sentences that are disproportionately aimed at minorities compared to other, compared to white Americans who commit the same crimes. We're talking about all sorts of issues that lead to mass incarceration. How can we talk about the Muslim community? We're talking about a few unique and particular things that happen to American Muslims when they are under investigation, number one, number two, actually charged with a crime, and number three, convicted of a crime and sentenced to prison. So, inshallah, what I want to discuss now is what are some of the unique things that Muslims face in that first stage, what you could call the pre-trial phase, the pre-being charged phase, just that investigatory phase where Muslims might be targeted by law enforcement for investigation for some reason. So we're going to talk about, again, American Muslims as targets, then as defendants, then as inmates, inshallah. So first, let's talk about American Muslims as targets, that is, targets of the criminal justice system. What are some of the things that American Muslims uniquely face from the criminal justice system? Now, we're going to largely be talking about here terrorism offenses, but not just alleged terrorism offenses. We're going to be talking about other things as well. We're going to talk about how even Muslims who have not committed any crime whatsoever, and especially any crime related to terrorism, the T word, might still be facing some unique challenges in terms of what they are experiencing at the hands of law enforcement. So number one thing that I think Muslim Americans experience in a unique way is spying. That is spying on Muslim communities by law enforcement, discriminatory surveillance of the American Muslim community. We saw this in New York, where the NYPD had a very extensive spying program aimed at the Muslim community, going into mosques and following businesses and other such things that just track Muslims in general and the assumption that Muslims needed to be watched uniquely compared to other people. And of course, you can understand the NYPD's concern about security, given that it is New York, given that 9/11 and other attacks have happened there. But this unique focus on Muslims compared to all others and doing it in a way that was discriminatory obviously was unacceptable to the community and eventually came to an end after much community pressure. So that's the first issue that Muslims may uniquely face is surveillance. Surveillance in the masajid, surveillance at their businesses. That is the first thing that Muslims may face. Next thing is that Muslims may have to deal with informants being sent into the mosques, paid informants being sent into the mosques. Now, sometimes these people are sent into the mosques looking for trouble. Other times they go into the mosques and they start some trouble because they can't find any trouble. Because as we all know, the masajid are perfectly peaceful, happy places, and you're not going to find crime there, almost certainly not there, right? And so sometimes you have informants who go into these masajid, and they've got to find something, so they make something up. And so that's another unique problem that American Muslims face, is this having to deal with informants. You don't necessarily see that. No one's sending informants, government informants, in to spy on the Tea Party or the Republican Party, despite, the extremism that has festered, or, other different religious groups that have extremism, evangelicals, every religion has some extremists within them, right? And so, but you don't see spies being sent to check on those people, even though their numbers are much larger than ours, and therefore probably to the extent there is a threat in other communities, it's probably much more significant than any threat in the Muslim community simply by the numbers. But I digress. The point is that that's another issue that Muslims have to face. The third issue Muslims have to face is entrapment. That is law enforcement engineered criminal plots. So that's where you might have an informant or an undercover agent sent to speak to a Muslim who may or may not already be suspected of thinking something dangerous, and then conversations are initiated, and essentially a plot to commit a crime is developed with this person and the undercover law enforcement agent, right? And so we call that entrapment because the question is, would that person have committed the crime, but for the intervention of the individual, the undercover individual, right? So that's another issue that American Muslims uniquely face. Finally, another major issue that I think Muslims face when they're being targeted by the system is that if they are young Muslims, in particular, they're vulnerable. If they are mentally ill Muslims, they're vulnerable because people are mentally ill sometimes, you know, don't have a firm grasp of reality or their legal rights. So they might not understand when someone's trying to manipulate them. They might have, views or opinions they don't express very clearly that can easily be manipulated, taken out of context. Another group of people who are targeted, people are politically active, people who like to talk about politics and express very strong opinions, maybe even strong disagreement with American policy, including American foreign policy, you know, that could get people in trouble, make people a target of informants or surveillance or discrimination. And finally, I think another group of people who are definitely at risk are immigrants, people who are immigrants here and are not U.S. citizens, because obviously if you are a lawful permanent resident or you've got a visa, a work visa, or a tourist visa, you're not at that same, you know, legally strong position that a U.S. citizen is, right? And so you may have some vulnerability about whether, you know, about your status here. And so I think they in particular are vulnerable, to potential issues. So with that, let's talk about informants in particular. I want to give you one example of an informant who was sent into a mosque by the FBI. And this story is funny because this man was sent into a mosque in L.A., and he was himself a criminal. He himself committed crimes that he got away with, but he was allowed to be an informant for the FBI. He went into a mosque and was talking crazy about violence and terrorism and other such things. And he was apparently bad at his job because the mosque ended up reporting him, the FBI informant, back to the FBI. You follow me? They reported him back to the FBI for what he did. Which is just hilarious. It shows you, number one, that Muslims are reporting danger. Number two, how silly this system of informants can be. And number three, how dangerous it is, because that man going into that mosque, making a concerted effort to manipulate people into doing something they would not have done otherwise, that's very dangerous to the community, right? And so that was an example of something that happened in L.A., a real-life informant. Next, I want to talk about Muslims who are targeted by bad training, by bad law enforcement training, because that can also contribute to the issue of mass incarceration. That is, if you are unjustly targeting Muslims and disproportionately doing so, then you're likely to end up arresting and prosecuting Muslims compared in numbers higher than what you normally would if you weren't uniquely targeting them, right? So another issue that Muslims face is bad training, bad law enforcement training. That contributes to the problem as well. So what do I mean when I talk about bad law enforcement training? Number one, I'm referring to law enforcement, quote unquote, counterterrorism training. Counterterrorism training that contains anti-Muslim teachings and teaches this nonsense under the guise of countering terrorism. That's very dangerous because you're teaching police officers to fear and loathe the people they are sworn to serve and protect. I'm going to give you two examples of this. One, both of them in the state of Georgia. One, there was a former local city police chief who retired after like 2 years on the job and then decided to go around the state teaching anti-Muslim classes to Republican Party chapters, to Tea Party chapters. I met him in 2012 when he was doing this, and you know, horrible stuff he was teaching, but I didn't think that much of it. If he wants to go teach bigotry to politicians, fine. But what we learned is that he was also teaching these classes to law enforcement agents for training credit. Cops were taking his classes and getting training credit for attending his classes, which is just insane. He would teach things like all rapes in Norway are committed by Muslims and immigrants. He taught that mosques are not houses of worship. They're actually military installations. We caught him on tape telling an anti-Muslim hate group that it's okay in this religion to rape little boys because they don't have beards, which is insane and evil and not part of the religion at all. These are some of the crazy things that he was teaching to people across the state, and he was also teaching classes to law enforcement agents. CARE Georgia learned about this, exposed it, and his classes were, alhamdulillah, shut down last year. Another bad counter-terror training course is GILI. That's the Georgia International Law Enforcement Exchange. That is a training course that still is in existence right now in the state of Georgia. It was founded by an Israeli-American who arranges for American cops, Georgia cops, to go overseas and train with the Israeli government despite all the unjust things that have happened under that government, from the occupation, the oppression of Palestinians, racial discrimination. But on top of that, it also trains with the Chinese government, the Egyptian government, which also commit human rights violations of their own, as well as the anti-Semitic Hungarian government, the Colombian government, and other governments that have serious issues with police brutality, with human rights violations, with civil liberties restrictions. So that's a program that we're fighting right now, actually. And just to give you a few examples of things that they have taught and said, the founding director of that program has said, and I quote, "From within Islamic circles, and I'm talking about leadership varied as it is, there's not been a single unequivocal condemnation of September 11th. He claims that Muslim leaders have never condemned 9/11, which is false. He has called self-styled Arab American advocacy groups that they support terror and that they've filed frivolous complaints about violations of their rights. He has claimed that the silent majority of Muslims and their various ethnic groups have not broken their silence about terrorism, jihad, and their attitude to the West. That's a quote. He has said reportedly, quote, the problem is because of the First Amendment, the FBI won't go into mosques. So this is the founding director of this program who is teaching all this crazy stuff and saying all these crazy things. And again, that's a program that right now is training Georgia police officers. And that's dangerous not just to Muslims but the general population, because if you are letting our officers learn from people who got foreign governments that engage in human rights violations and restrict civil liberties, then of course the logical fear is that our cops will learn some of those training techniques and bring them back home. So that's what's dangerous about that program. I'll give you a few examples of things that people learn through GILI. One is that cop cars should always flash their blue lights when they're on patrol, which is very disconcerting. If you live in a neighborhood, always have a cop car driving through with its blue lights flashing. Number two, they teach them when cops should withdraw their weapons and they should rack the weapons, you know, slide the weapon to make that threatening noise, and I assume do that out of fear, to frighten people into submission. People should fear radical Islam, quote-unquote radical Islam, and target free speech, not just crimes, but actual free speech by targeting what the program refers to as incitement. So that's, again, these things all contribute to the additional and disproportionate targeting of Muslim communities. Again, the bad training, right? Surveillance, discriminatory surveillance, the informants, all this is the first stage, right? All this is that first stage that contributes to overly and unjustly targeting and investigating Muslims, okay? That brings us to the next category, which is, okay, what about Muslims if they really have been charged, they're not just under suspicion, they've actually been charged with committing a crime, what then? What are we talking about then? And inshallah, it's 11:43 now, we'll take a brief break for that, and then we'll come back And you know what, we're not going to finish time, so what I'll do is let's take a break, we'll come back, and then if we have questions about anything so far, we'll take questions, and if we don't have questions, then I'll continue on with the presentation, and inshallah, we'll finish the rest at the next program. So let's take a break now for more PSAs.
Peace be upon you. Are you enjoying what you're hearing? If so, stay tuned. We'll be right back after these short messages. You are listening live to American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in all of the nation.
Hey, where you going? Don't hang up that phone. Stay tuned. We about to make it do what it do. Here with Uncle Woo. AM 360. Because you can't stop this movement. AM 360 is happening. Hey! Wally Ali, I'm remaking this song, buddy. Watch out now. You can't stop this movement. AM 360 is happening. Stay tuned for the Uncle Woo Show, y'all. Live music. Open discussion. Students of Imam W.D. Muhammad and other guests give you the correct picture. You got the conscious connector. Uncle Wu, and I do what I do. AM360. Check us out.
Whether you're listening on your iPod, smartphone, computer, or even sharing in the conversation, American Muslim 360 brings our group intellect together and is there for you every day. Be there now for AM360. Pledge your support at cwsc.us. Help us stay the place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. CWSC and American Muslim 360 wish you and your family a blessed and prosperous new year.
And we're back with Care on the Air, Civil Rights Hour with Attorney Ahmed Edward Ahmed Mitchell. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you? So let's see. Do we have any questions in the queue? If so, we'll take those questions. If not, we'll go to the end of this presentation, inshallah, and then wrap up. Any questions anyone would like to ask?
All right. Press 1 on your phone if you have a question, dear listeners. And if you're listening by way of the 24-hour streaming, that means on 701-719-4197, please dial in. You have a few more moments. You can dial in to 515-605-9891. This is the hour for speaking with Attorney Edward Ahmed Mitchell. Press 1 on your phone. None right at the moment, dear brother.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Okay, thank you very much. So, with that then, let's move to the next topic. And again, we only have 50 minutes, so I'm not going to leave some time at the end for final PSAs. But the topic I want to discuss now is, okay, what do Muslims experience when they are actually defendants in the criminal system? What are some of the unique things they experience then? Number one, inflammatory media coverage. That is, when a Muslim commits a crime, even if the crime had nothing to do with religion whatsoever, you'll often see this media jump to, terrorism, religious extremism, something to do with religion, right? It can't just be they're just a person who committed a crime. No, it's a Muslim who committed a crime. You follow me? So that's the first thing. And that is very dangerous because inflammatory media coverage can obviously heighten the chances of a biased jury pool and increase the chances of a conviction, not based on the content of what is alleged, whether it's true or not, but just based on the bias that people experienced, when they saw that inflammatory media coverage. The next thing that I think American Muslims often face when they are defendants is, as I mentioned earlier, the introduction of that informant testimony and entrapment evidence. You don't usually see that introduced. In many other cases, it's something that's somewhat unique to the Muslim community to have informants playing such a common role in prosecutions involving the Muslim community, okay? Number three thing that I think is often experienced is Islamophobic trial strategies. That is, even when a case has nothing to do with Islam, sometimes you will see that prosecutors will use Islamophobic strategies to try to influence the case. And I'll give you one example of that, just so you understand what I mean. There was a case that happened in Georgia a little over 12 years ago, and we're handling this case right now. And long story very short, a Muslim woman was charged with felony murder. The state alleged that she drove her husband to a location where he committed a crime. They allege that she, A, drove him there, and B, knew he was committing a crime, and therefore she was responsible for what happened there, and therefore they convicted her of felony murder. Now, at the trial, the prosecutor deliberately introduced evidence to show that she was a Muslim. There was no evidence in court that she was Muslim. She wasn't wearing a hijab in court, and she did not identify and say anything about being a Muslim, and her name was not an Arabic name. So you wouldn't have known she was a Muslim unless you saw the media coverage or the prosecutor told you about it, which is what happened. The prosecutor fought to introduce her driver's license, which had a picture of her in a hijab. And then on top of that, when she got on the witness stand to defend herself, this is what happened. Here's what he said to her. I'm going to read this to you. He said, quote, "You don't believe in taking oaths, do you?" She said, "Yes, I do." The defense attorney jumps in and says, "Judge, I object." The judge says, "Overruled." The prosecutor says, "What are your beliefs about taking oaths and telling the truth in our courts of law. She said the same as everybody else's. The prosecutor said they are. She said, yes, they are. The prosecutor said, you're not free from having to tell the truth in a non-Muslim courtroom. Let me say that again. The prosecutor said to her, you're not free from having to tell the truth in a non-Muslim courtroom? She responded, no, my religion does not interfere with any oath within the United States, period. My religion is my religion. I'm a Muslim. That's it. I believe in one God. I don't believe that Jesus, alayhi salam, is God. That's what my religion basically states. That happened in a trial in Georgia that had nothing to do with religion. The trial was not about Islam. The trial was not about religion. This was about an alleged robbery. Nothing to do with religion whatsoever. And yet, that was brought up in her trial, that Islamophobic trial strategy used to target her, even though the underlying allegation itself had absolutely nothing to do with religion. You following? Now, another thing that Muslims, I think, face sometimes is secret evidence and secret witnesses. And I'm thinking of federal cases. There have been terrorism prosecutions where literally the federal government will bring in a secret witness. You don't know who it is. You just know that, for example, he's an Israeli intelligence agent. This happened in a real trial. And you don't know his background. You can't even contest his background because you don't know who he is. And he testifies behind some sort of screen, so he can't be easily identified. And he gets to testify and put evidence into court, and that's used against the defendant. That has happened in federal court. And that is almost unheard of in other cases, but with Muslims accused of terrorism, we've seen that happen, okay? The next thing that we see happen with Muslim defendants is having very tough jail conditions, right? Usually it's somewhat easy to get bail, to get out of jail pending trial for most cases. But with Muslims accused of crimes, especially violent crimes, no. Oftentimes they are put in jail without bond. They're just locked up, period, okay? And they have to wait for the trial to resolve. And while they're waiting, they have restricted communications. They can't talk to their family very easily. They can't talk to their attorneys without being monitored, which is crazy. You know, as attorneys, we don't want people listening to the conversations we have with our clients. And you've also got situations in which then people are held in solitary confinement, which is very emotionally and mentally draining and damaging. We've seen that happen to Muslim defendants quite a bit because of this paranoia about Muslims compared to other people. So again, these are some of the things that Muslims in particular face when they are defendants in the criminal justice system. Another few things I want to mention is the sentences, right? That Muslims, when they are accused of crimes, can end up getting sentenced to very lengthy prison sentences, especially if the issue allegedly involves a terrorism offense. Even if no one died, even if it's just some idiot, some young kid who engaged in some sort of plot with an FBI, the kid never did anything to really implement the plot. If he is convicted of planning to do something, he could be spending the rest of his life in jail. That it kind of assumes that people can't change, people can't improve, and that someone should have to give up their life for a crime that took no one else's life, which is, you know, a scary thought here in the United States of America. So again, those are some of the things that Muslims face as defendants in the criminal system. Now, the last topic that I want to discuss, what do Muslims experience as federal prisoners? What do Muslims experience as state prisoners? These topics actually are going to take a while to discuss. It's 11:53 right now, so I'm going to stop now. Let's see. If we have any questions, I'll take them now. If not, we'll close out the program with any remaining PSAs, and then inshallah, we'll continue this discussion next week, and the week after next, and we will continue with the discussion of what Muslims face when they are actually prisoners in the system, inshallah. So with that, if we have any questions, I'll take those now. If not, let's wrap up the program, inshallah, and we'll continue the week after next, inshallah.
Yes, I have a question, Edward, and this is in reference to children, African-American descent, or say, Bilalians, that are, as you stated about the African-American, the ratio of ones becoming Muslim in prison after they've, you know, gotten into jail or what have you. But the children that were born from the parents who became Muslim and they're African American, right? And these children now are in their 20s and perhaps 30s, and they're getting incarcerated with the names that we ascribe to them. Is there some type of a study? I know we haven't done it. We just now starting here in St. Petersburg in Tampa Bay area to begin that study as to how the children have drifted into these environmental arenas and what's their quest. You know what I mean? So I don't know about the study for the population of them in the percentage in jail, but I know a high number are getting arrested for various reasons.
That's a very interesting question. So we don't have any statistics on that, on the exact numbers of, you know, people who are just children of Muslims but maybe not practicing, getting locked up compared to people who are themselves, you know, converts to Islam. And we don't really know. We just know that most of the people who are in prison are converts, number one. And as far as we know, there are not a disproportionate number of people who are born Muslim going to prison compared to the general population. There could be, you know, I don't know, but we don't have any statistics to show that, to back that up. No surveys have been done to show that yet. So that's something maybe someone should investigate, especially the Muslim community. If we've got people who are born Muslim who end up straying from the path and going to prison, that's something that we definitely obviously want to know about and to address, inshallah. But we don't have any real stats on that to know for sure. Is that happening at a disproportionate number, and why is it happening?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
That is it. And one person on your phone, if you have a question right now. Otherwise, it is 11:56 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And later this evening, Attorney Ahmed Mitchell, Attorney Edward Ahmed Mitchell, there will be criminal justice reform at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and prisoner reform at 7 p.m. And criminal justice reform is with Imam Hananiah Shabazz. Prisoner reform is with Imam Bilal Saleem. And birth of women with Dr. Amina Ali. And ending the evening at 9 p.m., breaking the habit with Imam Hananiah Shabazz and his wife, Dr. Amina Ali. So everyone, please plan to join America Muslim 360, the most listened to Islamic radio station in the nation, again later this evening. Back to you.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Please stay with us, everyone, as we will play a few public service announcements that you would truly perhaps love to hear about.
Whether you're listening on your iPod, smartphone, computer, or even sharing in the conversation, America Muslim 360 brings our group intellect together and is there for you every day. Be there now for AM 360. Pledge your support at cwsc.us. Help us stay the place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. CWSC and American Muslim 360 wish you and your family a blessed and prosperous new year.
And we're asking, of course, everyone, please continue to pledge your support here for America Muslim 360 broadcast. And as everyone respectfully have come to know that America Muslim 360 broadcast is a 24-hour streaming, live and podcast. Go to cwsc.us. And please, if you have not joined yet, the effort of volunteerism, sharing your time, your efforts with and in behalf of the general community at large. There's much that can be gained from your contribution. So please go to cwsc.us and press on the MCNRD, D as in David, and fill out that application, that form, and join us in our efforts here to help in many, many ways. Your talent will be your contribution. Thank you for being here and sharing your time with American Muslim 360 broadcast, the parent body being that of the community-wide Shura Conference. This is Martha Naila Abdullah, your programming manager. Assalamu alaikum. God's peace be upon you. And let's take it to are you one who would love to read Quran? Well, your effort can be used to read Quran daily here on American Muslim 360 broadcast. Dial 910-317-0297. Again, dial 910-317-0297. And join the efforts of reading Quran daily. Are you young and interested in being a broadcaster or an intern or working with the scholarships committee or any of the other intelligentsia here with American Muslim 360 being one of the intelligentsia? The community-wide Shura Conference offers many intelligentsia that you can participate with. Are you interested? Then please connect with your parents and have them dial 910-317-0297 or send an email to info@cwsc.us. We welcome your volunteerism also. And now, stay tuned, everyone.
We don't run from challenges. We overcome any obstacle. We don't cower in the face of can't or too difficult. We find a way to make it happen through faith, work, and the power of the good internet. We don't seek results that are just ordinary because a believer is supposed to be extraordinary. Who are we? We are the volunteers of the CWSC, ready, willing, and able to lend to the Creator a loan that will be added to and multiplied many times over. Think you have what it takes to be a CWSC volunteer? Then register with the NCNRD. Your talent, experience, and knowledge. Want to learn more? Visit cwsc.us. Look for the MCNRD today, and you too can help unleash and harness the power of the group intellect. And together, we can remake the world. This has been a public service announcement from Imam Abdul Hakim Abdullah, CEO of American Muslim 360 Radio, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Assalamu alaikum.
On behalf of the Community-Wide Shura Conference, Board of Directors, the Mohammed Schools National Alumni Association, the Islam in America Movement, the Muslim Enterprise Institute, and all honorary co-chairs, you're invited to an unprecedented event for our Muslim and fellow faith communities. We're marking the 10th anniversary of the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, American Muslim 360, with a family, friends, and community crews to beautiful Cozumel, departing from the famous Florida Gulf Coast of Tampa on March 5th, 2020, aboard the magnificent Carnival cruise ship Paradise.
Welcome aboard the CWSC 2020 National Intelligentsia Interfaith Cruise to Cozumel, featuring Early Welcome to Tampa by local faith communities. And then it's Bon Voyage to Western Caribbean Cozumel, including daily congregational celeste, halakha circles, and physical exercise. Juma at Sea, National Symposium with panel discussions, call for and presentation of papers and awards, published authors circle celebrating the scholarship of our group intellect, and more groundbreaking intelligentsia presentations. Meet and greet the American Muslim 360 Radio National Talk Show host. Join hands in the Neighborly Needs Community Service Project. And then attend the CWSC AM 360 Black Tie Gala and Award Ceremony, including recognition of all CWSC scholarship recipients. All of this in addition to enjoying everything the Paradise has to offer, including spas, 24-hour room service, shopping, shore excursions, movies, and activities for the whole family. Although we cruise in 2020, don't delay in reserving your cabin and sharing the cruise with family and friends. Call 1-800-327-5782. That's 1-800-327-5782. And mention Community-Wide Shura Conference booking number 6DLB36. That's 6. D as in David, L as in Larry, B as in Bobby, 36. Visit CWSC for more information. We look forward to celebrating with you aboard the Paradise in 2020. Together, we can remake the world.
It's a celebration. Let's celebrate. Come on now.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Kareem Hassan. You know, probably everyone listening to this message knows someone who's been touched by cancer either directly or indirectly. There are different types of cancer such as breast, prostate, and colon cancers. Some ethnic groups are at a higher risk for certain cancers. For example, did you know African American women are 20 to 40% more likely to die from breast cancer? Or that Hispanic Americans are less likely to get screened for colon cancer than either Caucasians or African Americans? And African American men are approximately 70% more likely to develop prostate cancer in their lifetime than Caucasians or Hispanic men. And the risk increases with age. So whatever your gender or ethnicity, check with your medical provider about your health risk factors and appropriate screening by age, ethnicity, and family history. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family. You will need your health to help remake the world. A public service message from American Muslim 360 and the CWSC.